Hello, and welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Hello, and welcome back to Counsel for the State. Thank you for downloading the podcast or listening online. A reminder that Counsel for the State is also available at the AG's website, ag.idaho.gov, as well as through podcast outlets like iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. This is episode 8 of Counsel for the State, and today we welcome two very special guests to the program. Chris Toth and Al Lama are with the National Association of Attorneys General, known around AG's offices like ours as NAG. Chris and Al are visiting Boise this week, all the way from NAG headquarters in Washington, D.C. Chris is the executive director of the organization. Chris, we thank you for making some time during your visit to Boise to appear on Counsel for the State.
Thanks for having me.
And Al Lama is the deputy executive director. Al, we appreciate you being on the podcast as well.
Good morning.
And here alongside, as always, on Counsel for the State is Brian Kane. Brian is the Assistant Chief Deputy in the Office of the Attorney General. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks, Scott. Good to be here.
So, Chris, we'll start with you. For those who may not understand what exactly it is that your organization does, why don't you sort of start by giving us your elevator speech of what the National Association of AGs does?
Well, our association at its very heart is to help AGs serve their constituents better, to help them be better at their jobs and be more effective in bringing justice to their communities. And we do that in a number of different ways. First of all, we help the AG share best practices, find better ways to do things by talking to their colleagues. AGs are like any other profession. I mean, whether you're an electrician or whether you're a governor, it helps to get together with other people from your profession to talk about, hey, what works, what hasn't worked, what have you done that you feel is the best way to do something. And so part of what we do is we are a forum to bring them together and to share good ideas.
Okay, why don't you take a minute to explain a little bit about your background, what it is that you did before you got to NAG?
Sure, I spent most of my actual career as an attorney being a prosecutor in Indiana. I went into the military right after college, then went to law school later in life, stayed in the reserve. So while I continued to pursue my profession as a prosecutor and later at NAG, unfortunate acronym, I know, but National Association of Attorneys General, easy one to remember. I stayed in the reserves, so did a number of deployments overseas with that, and eventually ended up in D.C. as the deputy executive director of NAG, and then became the executive director in 2017.
Okay.
So while you were working with NAG, you deployed in the Armed Services?
I did. I deployed a couple times with NAG, and I deployed also before I came to NAG.
So you know how to keep yourself busy.
I do, yeah, unfortunately.
Al, will you take a minute to tell us about yourself?
Sure. Most of my career was as an assistant attorney general in New Mexico. I worked with the AG's office there for about 21 years, mostly on the civil side, consumer, representing state agencies, worked in the litigation division. And then my last few years I was there, I served in the executive office as chief deputy attorney general. When I had an opportunity to work with NAG a lot during that time as chief deputy, and there was an opportunity to move to Washington, D.C. and to join the organization. I had built a great relationship with them, and I really enjoyed working with them, and I thought, you know, what the heck? So after 25 years as a practicing attorney, I moved to D.C. in 2014 and started this stint working with NAG and with Chris.
So as a fellow Westerner, what's it like moving to D.C.?
Well, you have to get used to the idea of humidity. Which is not really a fun relationship, particularly the beginning, but obviously, D.C. is a vibrant, exciting place. There's so much going on. It's a really great place to be. However, I miss the West, and I miss the connection, the accessibility that you have not only to your natural environment in the West, but also to its people.
Sure.
And I think the East is to some extent a little bit more disconnected.
So are Western folks friendlier than DC folk?
On average, I would say yes. You have to, as a Westerner, you have to acclimate to a little different. You know, when you're in the metro, you really don't look at people. You just sort of look down. If you look at people or smile or, you know, wave, they look at you as if you're crazy. Whereas here, you know, that's saying hello and good morning and looking at someone in the eyes is sort of a, you know, that's a sign of respect.
Sure. So. Sometimes if you say good morning to somebody in D.C., the first thing they do is check their wallet.
So. Exactly. Yeah. That's a big difference.
That didn't happen on our way to the coffee shop here in Boise, did it?
No.
Good. Chris, besides Attorney General Wazin and the Office of the Attorney General here in Boise, who makes up membership of NAG?
Well, it's 56 members. So how do we get to 56? Well, we've got the 50 states, but then the District of Columbia has an attorney general, and then the United States has five territories, two in the Caribbean, three in the South Pacific, that also are members. Their AGs are also members of the organization.
And are their needs of the organization and the way they conduct their offices, are they similar to a state AG's office?
They are. Every AG has a different level of jurisdiction. No AG office is completely the same with another. Some AGs are the district attorney, the local prosecutor, essentially, for their entire state. One or two AGs don't have any criminal jurisdiction. However, they do have, all of them do have several things in common. One is that they all enforce consumer protection laws and are very diligent about that. They are basically on the front lines of protecting consumers in this country. And then secondly, they all advise and counsel their state agencies as well and provide counsel to state government.
So consumer protection, that gets kind of to the beginnings of NAG, which were somewhat auspicious. Can you talk about that?
NAG came into existence in 1907, and it was convened around the idea of doing something about the Standard Oil Trust.
So an issue near and dear to Idaho citizens is gas prices. So it probably is good news to all of us in Idaho that NAG was formed to deal with
exactly.
gas prices.
You know, Standard Oil was just a huge beast. It engaged in what is called both horizontal and vertical monopoly practices, and the state AGs were about the only people, when they came together as a team, big enough to take them on and get some relief for American consumers.
So the AGs coming together as a single legal team sounds formidable.
It is formidable, and we see that over and over again. You know, we live in a time, it's a little bit partisan right now, but the AGs come together over and over again to protect consumers. And when I say come together, all of them in many cases, or most of them. So they reach across party lines. They all share a common interest in making sure people aren't defrauded or that illegal antitrust exists. And they will come together in what we call multi-state litigation and work together to fight the bad guys and bring.
So in this era of partisan politics, at least one aspect of government is still coming together for
exactly.
that common good.
And that's a good story. It doesn't get much publicity. And obviously, our members have distinct philosophical differences when it comes to some political issues. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of a democracy, to have a robust and vibrant discussion on what direction the country should go into. But they are all agreed that consumers need to be protected, that government needs to run well. And the good news story is our members like each other across the aisle. Yeah, they may have some disagreements. Like I said, that's fine and that's fair. But they like each other, they respect each other, and they work together very well when the time calls for it.
Any recent examples of multi-states or AGs coming together that we might recognize from the news?
Sure. The mortgage fraud settlement. After the crash of 2008-2009, all the AGs came together and tried to pursue justice for American consumers and did receive a settlement from the big banks in that case. We've had several other, numerous instances where they've come together. The Volkswagen settlement, And right now, although it's still pending litigation, all the states have come together in one way or another to pursue some justice in the current opioid situation.
Oh, and that's a big issue.
It's a really big issue. Huge issue right now, right. Yeah. And a lot of Americans are suffering because of it.
For the average constituent listening to the podcast, explain why it makes sense for a team of AGs across the country to team up on a common issue such as the Volkswagen emissions cheating scandal, as opposed to Idaho conducting its business and New Mexico doing its own thing, New York doing its own thing. Why is that uniformity key?
Well, it's kind of the difference between the strength of one finger or bringing a fist together, and then the strength of a fist as opposed to one individual finger. There are bad actors in the world. Some of them are very powerful, have a lot of financial backing, and sometimes they're not necessarily going to be as concerned about doing the right thing if it's just one or two AGs. But when they all come together, the only force in this country that can come close to matching that is the federal government. They know they're going to have to deal with the situation, and they know they're going to have to try to agree on some relief to who they wronged.
So are there ever any issues, for example, when you put an Idaho and a New York in the room?
Well, there's going to be some obvious philosophical differences on some issues, but still it's remarkable how much the Idaho and New York AG can agree on when it comes to consumer protection.
Because it's not a partisan issue.
It's not a partisan issue.
It doesn't matter how many people are in your state. If consumers were wronged, there's a commonality there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it sounds like AGs really have kind of developed some specialized knowledge. Now, does your organization also handle the fact that AGs' jobs are a little bit different from an ordinary attorney's?
They are. I think one of the main ways is that there is an ethic in being an attorney that you have to represent your client, right or wrong, and you have to give them the best representation possible. And that's important for our system to work. Everybody needs good representation. The AG community, though, first and foremost, has to do justice. And they are ministers of justice with a small M and a small J. So they are first and foremost concerned about doing the right thing and making sure that the right thing is done for their constituents.
But with this, the specialized nature of their jobs, a lot of times, where do the AGs get the knowledge necessary to complete that? And how do they refine that, you know, through lessons learned in these different
sure.
types of multi-state actions?
Well, a couple ways. One is, as I talked about earlier, coming together and sharing best practices and say, hey, I tried this, it didn't work, but I tried this, it did work, and then they can bring those best practices back individually to their states. The other thing that we do, a big part of what we do, is we provide training to lawyers and non-legal staff of individuals around the country. And here's the great thing for Idaho taxpayers, is that we provide that training at absolutely no cost to our members. We pay for travel, lodging, everything, but we bring people together, and the staff that we bring together are largely trained by other AG staff around the country, and it makes everybody better at what they do and better able to serve their constituents.
And if I understand correctly, there is no resource similar to this for members of AG offices.
There isn't. We are it, and actually we are now, in terms of volume, the largest trainer of government attorneys in the country.
Chris, that brings up the question you mentioned, you know, the scholarships for training and whatnot.
Sure.
How was NAG funded?
NAG is funded through a variety of different measures. Our core operations are funded through the dues that each state pays. So all 56 AGs, of course, are members. They all pay dues based on their population. So the more populated states pay more dues. But then we are also funded by carve-outs from settlements with cases that are brought by the AGs. So, for instance, when there was the tobacco settlement in 1998, with the major tobacco companies. It was called the Master Settlement Agreement, and it was between the vast majority of the states and the major tobacco companies. And a large part of that was carved out to ultimately fund the trainings that we do. And then that's continued as we move forward. funds that are not allocated to the states themselves are set aside so that NAG can continue to train lawyers and non-lawyer staff so they are best they can be at representing their constituents.
And a very good example of the training coming up next month in Boston is the every other year Public Information Officers Conference that NAG staff organizes and host, and I can tell our taxpayers here in the state of Idaho I will be attending and doing so on a scholarship from NAG. That's a very good example of the training opportunities, a training opportunity. Brian, you're a presenter occasionally at NAG conferences. I will turn the microphone on you and ask you to sort of talk about some of the training opportunities you have offered to others through NAG.
So NAG and the arm of NAG that does the training is actually called NAGTREE, which is the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute, which then creates the acronym NAGTREE. I mean, it's still government, so we can't not have our acronyms.
Right.
but it, and I think that, you know, one of the great things about NAGTREE is, as Chris noted, it really does train, you know, everyone from the paralegal and support staff within offices up to the attorneys, up to the senior management personnel within the office. As a matter of fact, in about 1 month from now, I'll be going to New Jersey to assist in a training of their management folks through the Management and Leadership Core Competencies course. And that's a program that Al has really developed quite a ways along with Nikki Calvano. And maybe, Al, you want to speak to that Leadership Institute?
Sure, Brian. Happy to. I think the Center for Leadership Development, which is one of the centers that we have at NAGTREE, really focuses on developing individuals in management and leadership positions. You know, the reality of things is that unless you have effective management, you have individuals who lead an organization effectively, you can define all sorts of things you want to accomplish, but without the individuals there to actually make sure that the work gets done and gets done in a professional way, you won't produce the results that you need to achieve on behalf of your constituents. So the program that you described is really an opportunity for individuals in an organization to really learn best practices and develop skills that are going to help them manage and lead others successfully. So it's a great program.
And I think that, you know, again, you know, Chris said that no two AG offices are the same, but almost all AG offices have commonalities, mm-hmm. right? And so almost every AG office has a need to have supervising attorneys or attorneys in leadership positions to manage the workload. Every AG office has to deal with open records or public records and open meetings laws in some capacity. And so it gives us the ability to take both the lessons learned in Idaho and share them with other states, but then there's also a reciprocal learning that occurs, for example, when we learn that Florida confronted this situation and this is how they dealt with it, or Mississippi, or New Mexico. And I think that, you know, one of the great benefits of it is it creates that environment for us to learn from our common and shared experiences to then offer the citizens of our respective states that much better legal representation.
Brian, if you could subtract an organization like NAG out of the equation, there's an alternate universe where you have to do what you do in our office without an organization like this. How much more difficult would it be office-wide for us to do our work?
So I think it becomes a really, it becomes a heavy burden to lift if you have to do it within your office. And part of it is just the resources required to kind of keep up to date on those areas of the law or management and leadership. I mean, if you think about an attorney, how much time does an attorney really have if they're litigating cases or representing a client to say, you know what, I'm going to study up on the Harvard Business Review's Management and Leadership Series, and then I'm going to bring it forward to the office. Meanwhile, I've also got 37 cases sitting on my desk and 10 unanswered phone calls from clients. And so when you look at it in the list of priorities, you know, NAGTREE and NAG fill a niche that, quite honestly, it would be almost impossible, especially for smaller offices, to fill, because priority-wise and resource-wise, we just can't get it done.
Your acronym joke, by the way, of all the jokes you've cracked on the podcast so far, that's the best one because it's so true.
Thank you.
Chris, you have an opportunity here to address constituents in the state of Idaho, Attorney General Wasden's constituents. We're talking about, in this situation, training opportunities and how it makes an AG's office's job easier to do. But for the average constituent, why is it important that their Attorney General participates in an organization like the National Association of AGs?
Well, if you exist in a vacuum and you're not, you don't have your ear open to what's going on in the rest of the country, you can miss out on some very good ways to serve your constituents better. We're all better when we communicate with each other, no question about that. So an organization like ours provides a forum for that communication. So General Wasden can come to one of our meetings, for instance, and say, hey, we tried this in Idaho, it really worked well. And somebody from another state, whether it's Wyoming or New Hampshire, can say, you know what, I want to try that too. And at the same time, he can hear about some great initiative that's going on in another state. And we see that over and over again when our AGs come together, is one AG will talk about the fact that they've found a unique way to deal with an issue. One of the things that came up was investigating opioid cases, for instance. One state had a very unique approach to it. We publicized that to the rest of the AGs, and now we've done trainings in over 30 states on using that method to fight the opioid epidemic. So communication is important. It's just, you know, society has always advanced when we communicate across borders, within borders. So we're here to provide that forum for communication. And then the training is important too, because every citizen, every constituent, no matter where they are, wants to have the best possible, best trained people serving them in government. And it's important that we provide that training, that all organizations provide that type of training, but particularly training for government servants, so they can be the best at what they're going to be, because everybody's better served if government servants are highly trained.
I think that Sandra Day O'Connor remarked that states are the laboratories of democracy. And when you think about an organization like NAG, it really provides attorneys general the ability to look into each other's laboratory and show and share their work. And if you think about it in terms of what developments have come out of organizations like NAG, the National Do Not Call List was birthed within the states, and it was birthed within state AG offices.
Correct.
And so as we now are currently dealing with the headache of robocalls, which you probably noticed, all of the AGs have again come together to address that. It's a great example of the states and the state AG offices as these laboratories of democracy, but also open to showing and sharing their work to lift up everyone in America's boats.
I want to go back to the idea of NAG as sort of this model of civility as our politics have become hyper-partisan. Attorney General Wasden, as a Republican, is a member of the Republican AGs Association, mm-hmm. called RAGA. There's a Democratic counterpart as well for Democratic AGs across the country. As those groups do what they do with perhaps a partisan bend at mm-hmm. times, has that bled over into the NAG operation and made your job as an association of both groups somewhat more difficult?
Well, both those organizations exist for a purpose. To run a campaign, we fully understand that you've got to be able to publicize your message, and that means you need money for contributions and the like. So the two organizations, RAGA and DAGA, they are there to support their members and to support perhaps their philosophical perspectives that may be different on some of these other issues. But we have a unique niche that we fill at NAG, and regardless of what's going on over here on the left or over here on the right, all our members realize that they can come to NAG and we're an honest broker. We're going to give them the straight story, both sides of an issue, and that makes them better at what they do.
And I would imagine
in part that's because NAG isn't beholden to any
correct
lobbyist dollars. You don't fundraise as far
we don't
as private dollars or donors or anything.
We take no corporate contributions, and because we take no corporate contributions, we're not beholden to anyone. And our members have made it very, very clear that they want NAG to fill that niche where we are not beholden to anybody, so we can just provide at our meetings and our trainings just the straight story and what they need without a partisan bent.
Is it accurate to say that, you know, kind of the NAG forum is almost like a, from Dragnet, just the law, ma'am?
It is, yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's one of the great things about the organization and the reason I think we have our members' trust on both sides of the aisle.
Does the longevity of the organization at all concern you with the trend in politics taking on this partisan tone?
Well, I have to be concerned about that. I am concerned about that. You cannot take the current collegiality that we have for granted. You have to work hard at keeping it. Perhaps what makes it easier for us is that attorneys general are a unique animal. Their job is not to legislate. Their job is not to first and foremost take a partisan position that they may even know in their heart of hearts is not realistic. Their job is to enforce the law, protect consumers, if they have criminal jurisdiction, prosecute corrupt individuals, people that have broken the law. Law is pretty straightforward, and so I think that allows us to have a degree of collegiality that a lot of other organizations don't have. We're also sensitive to anything that may disrupt that collegiality and that civility and try to create avenues of communication as best we can across the aisle so we can keep that moving forward. I think that's very, very important. And obviously I'm concerned about the future, need to be. I'm paid to be concerned about that. But I'm also an optimist based on what I'm seeing right now. I can say to you, and I'm not always an optimist by nature, but I can say to you that it's been my pleasure to work with some pretty impressive individuals in the AG community. And I'm not being paid to say this, or I've not been asked to say this, but I do want to, while I'm on this podcast, to talk about this. I probably worked with over several hundred AGs during my tenure. And one of the individuals that absolutely stands out as one of the most finest and most ethical AGs I've ever worked with is Lawrence Wasden of Idaho. He's a consummate gentleman. He puts ethics first. He puts doing the right things first. He's been one of the rocks of our organization from the time I joined NAG. And it fills my heart when I can work with people that I know are just about putting principle first.
That's very nice of you to say. As an office, we appreciate that. So thank you. Speaking of that, you're saying this in the office of the Attorney General here in Boise, and perhaps this is something I should have touched on earlier, but Al, I'll pose this question to you. When you make a visit to a state capital like Boise, and you come to, in this case, Attorney General Wasden's home turf, what's the goal of a visit like this?
You know, I think one of the goals certainly is to get an update, get some additional information about what's going on in the organization. What are some of the challenges? What are some of the opportunities? It's an opportunity for us to learn about what the particular office is facing from the standpoint of challenges and opportunities in the organization. It's also, I think, a good opportunity to really see the Attorney General and his staff working and engaging in their environment, because there also is a great learning opportunity for us to see them actually in their offices, engaging with constituents, conducting meetings. Gives us a full picture of what their life is, so to speak, as an Attorney General, as a professional staff. It just gives us that more complete picture of the day-to-day.
It keeps us from becoming victim to the D.C. bubble, which is a thing. And between Al and I, I think we've easily been to half the AG offices this year alone. And every time we come to an AG office, we learn something, and we learn to be more sensitive to things. Brian and I have already had several discussions this morning where I realize I have to go back and make things a little bit better in one way or another. And that's very, very important to us.
And you can come anytime you want. You're always welcome here to come
Thank you.
Enjoy the dry air in Boise,
Al. I certainly enjoy that, that's for sure.
So as we wrap up here, what's on the horizon for NAG?
Well, we want to continue what we're doing now better. We continue to expand our training efforts, and so we can reach more and more staff around the country. We want to continue to provide to improve the quality of support we're providing to AGs. We also want to continue working on initiatives that solidify the collegiality of the organization, and something we're going to be working on even more in the next couple of years is technology is advancing obviously very, very quickly. It doesn't advance arithmetically, it advances exponentially. So a lot of issues are coming up that are going to have profound legal implications as we continue to advance, whether it's autonomous vehicles, whether it's issues with AI, cryptocurrency, and they're all going to have a profound effect on how our country does business, how people do business with each other. And AGs are and need to be at the forefront of that. So we're going to be forward-leaning and work hard to try to address those emerging issues over the next couple of years.
Okay,
very good. That is, I mean, NAG does fulfill that role ably. Many kind of cutting edge or leading edge legal issues that we've addressed in Idaho, we've actually been prepared for because we've been part of a NAG presentation or a webinar, or you know, they have multiple vehicles to bring that information to our offices to kind of keep us informed so that we're not surprised by what the next iteration of whatever is.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both very much for being on the podcast. Chris Toth is the Executive Director of the National Association for Attorneys General. We appreciate your time very much, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And Al Lama, Deputy Executive Director of NAG, thank you as well. This has been great.
Thank you.
And Brian Kane, Deputy Attorney General here in the office of the Idaho AG. Thank you for co-piloting the podcast again today, Brian.
Until next time.
And thank you for joining us for episode number 8 of Counsel for the State. Remember, Counsel for the State is available at the AG's website. That is ag.idaho.gov. Episodes are also available through popular podcast outlets like iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. We appreciate you joining us for this podcast. Hope you can tune in to some, perhaps some of our past ones and future ones as well. We'll see you next time.